Welcome to the Gambling Gauchos. I'm Rob Bro. He's Kyle Jacobson. He's Money Mainville. We've got it going on tonight. The NCAA tournament in full effect. Currently wrapping up the round of 32. A couple of games underway, but we will be recording through them. Namely, Houston and Texas A&M, who beat Nebraska. Nebraska has as many wins in the NCAA tournament as I do, personally, all time. So that's pretty impressive for both of us. We'll get into the rest of the NCAA tournament. Also, lots of Texas Tech basketball to talk about. Obviously, we'll do a season recap with year one under Coach Gass. We want to thank you all for listening here, either on the Republic of Football feed or on YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, smash that like button. Hammer that subscribe button. We'll move on from there. All right, Kyle, Money, how you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Anything special happened this weekend?
Oh, we had a birthday party for my daughter.
Happy birthday. Little Gauchita.
Little Gauchita. She's 2 years old. Can you believe it?
That is amazing. We've been doing that podcast this long because that was she was just a twinkle in your eye when we started.
Yeah, you were actually one of the first people I had to tell because you and I were starting the podcast like right after I found out. And so I was like, hey, just so you know, 7 months from now, this might look a little different.
Here we are with Gauchito on the way.
That's right.
Money, any birthday parties this weekend you went to?
No birthday parties. Got a new phone. Pretty excited about that. It was long overdue. My iPhone X was hanging on by a thread. So,
oh, wow. Yeah.
Glad to have the new iPhone 15 and watching Grand Canyon in Alabama play a good one down to the wire right now. Lots of good basketball this weekend. Today, not so much, but lots of good basketball to watch over the last couple of days, and that always makes me happy.
Money might hit us with a new phone. Who dis? Do kids still say that, Money?
I don't think so.
I think it's been a while. It's like 2018 or something.
I went from the X to my new phone when I did it, and it was very needed. It was a big adjustment too, because what was the last iPhone that had the home button? I remember I waited a long time, and they went from the home button to one without it, and it was just like a brand new Surface to me. I had no idea what was going on. I think my dad went from the 6 to the 12 or something when he upgraded. That was a pretty big jump too. Anyways, Texas Tech basketball losing to NC State way back on Thursday. Here we are on Sunday night. We've got some time to decompress. We can talk about the rest of the tournament too, but let's just start with Texas Tech and get that out of the way. We were fairly confident on Wednesday's episode, but on Thursday, at some point, I feel like at least two of us switched from being confident to maybe a little unsure, especially with two or three other 11 seeds winning before you even get on the court. It just seemed like a little unease as we went into the ball game. Did it play out how you thought it would, or are you a little more disappointed maybe? Especially because the conversation on Wednesday was, by the way, you can listen to those Wednesday episodes on Patreon, patreon.com/gamblinggauchos. The conversation was basically, well, you know, it's house money. You've had a good season. You don't have to win here. You want to. Did any of that change with the loss, Kyle?
A little bit.
Yeah.
There was kind of the same feeling the second time you played Texas in the regular season. And in the Discord, I remember just being like, you know, it doesn't feel like we're about to play a big game against Texas or win a big game against Texas. And I think some of that was starting to creep in on Thursday, especially with you being one of the last games. I was just like, I don't know. You know, we've been fortunate as fans to experience several wins in the NCAA tournament over the last 6 years. And it didn't feel like that was about to happen. I can't really describe it any other way. And then when Oakland beat Kentucky, I was kind of like, there's more pressure now because you have an extremely viable path to the Sweet 16. Like, win two games that you're favored in on a neutral court, and you're in the Sweet 16, which early in the season, I remember saying was like our absolute ceiling. And I'm looking over at the other side of the bracket and going, all it takes is Shaka choking, and you're probably going to be favored to go to the Elite Eight. And that hasn't happened yet. So it almost – that was kind of why I liked the draw. I was like, you beat NC State, hopefully, and then it's a total upside game against Kentucky. You either knock off one of the sport's biggest blue bloods, or you lose after going further than anybody thought you would. So when Oakland won, I was kind of like, man, now we're in the territory of if we don't beat NC State, everyone's going to have that kind of what-if thought. In some ways, the game kind of went how I hoped it would. You got their big man in foul trouble early. Problem is, his backup comes in and plays a career game. Like, they were – I don't want to say they were better with him off the floor, but there wasn't much of a drop-off. Like, they were leading pretty much wire-to-wire with or without him. The three-point shooting, I know, wasn't good enough. Sorry, I think my wife is kind of angry in the kitchen because I didn't do the dishes. But yeah, so I feel like you had your opportunities there to, oh my God, hang on, I'll be right back.
Oh, that was great. Yes, the comments work. Bryn's songs on Twitter, we can see them. what's his name? Middlebrooks, career high game. And in the first half, they certainly were better with him in the game than with Burns. Burns kind of dominated the second half. But, man, that the defense of Warren Washington obviously was behind par, under par, over par, I guess is what you would call it. With his ankle coming back from injury. But yeah, Burns pretty much did whatever he wanted on both Robert Jennings and Warren Washington, especially in the second half.
One more quick thought. The shot chart that Money posted was straight up depressing. They were either – they made like four or five threes, and besides that, they were shooting at the rim. Yeah. And that was what I thought was supposed to be one of their weaknesses, was that they actually took more like mid-range jumpers and quote-unquote bad shots than other teams. And so you clearly didn't force them into that kind of game defensively. I'm not really disappointed in Warren Washington or Darion Williams' effort. I mean, I think we don't know the extent of their injuries. They're probably doing the best they could. Sucks that you couldn't get Warren Washington back into game shape. But obviously, if you brought him back any sooner, you were probably risking re-injury and him not playing at all. So I think you still probably did the best thing possible there. It just wasn't going to be good enough. So those are kind of my high-level thoughts on the game.
Money, as we've done after most of the basketball games this year, how did Texas Tech lose that?
Yeah, I think defensively down low, that was kind of the story of the game. The first couple of minutes, like, Robert Jennings was down there banging around with Burns, was playing really tough, playing way above his bill, was really impressed with his showing in those first couple of minutes. But obviously, you know, asking him to line up one-on-one with a 300-pounder that's just banging into you is a task that's definitely going to take a toll on you as the game goes on. And so I think he got a little fatigued, kind of got worn down a little bit by Burns. And obviously you had Middlebrooks just completely cook you, which I was very unsuspecting. Had a career high, and then, you know, they go and play Oakland and he scores 2 points and fouls out. And it's just like, man, like, what are you doing down low? And so I think defensively down low was probably the biggest storyline of the game, but you also pretty much shot yourself out of that game, or at least of having any chance to really claw back into it. It was really your worst shooting game of the year that really mattered. Like, you shot worse against Kansas State. You were 5 of 25 in that game, but 7 of 31, like, you were just kind of trading them getting really easy looks down underneath with just really difficult threes that weren't going down. And so I think you kind of shoot yourself out of a game, and then they obviously just got a lot of easy looks.
Sorry, I was looking at the Discord log. I did not know who killed Sports. Kyle was asking about this. Is way inside baseball. Nobody cares. But it wasn't you, Kyle. I thought you were asking because you killed it, but it wasn't you.
I know. It's never me. Everybody thinks I delete all the channels.
It was actually very surprising.
It happened one time.
Let's see. Shelly says, I've been in a sports hangover hibernation for 2 days, dipping my toe back in. We'll see how much I can handle. That basketball game, especially because you also lost to BYU in baseball, just kind of like back-to-back there on Thursday. Baseball was a tailspin. They won 2 cents. They won the series. It would have been Coach Tadlock's first time since 2013, I think, losing 3 straight Big 12 series. He's never done it to open a Big 12 season. So you kind of get around that. But basketball-wise, Starter 179 says, why didn't we try to drive the ball? Felt like we played their game, not ours. I want your thoughts on this. We don't talk about him often, but Richard Isaacs tweets a lot. And after the game, he tweeted basically that Pop's going to have major hip surgery after the season. Do we think we can attribute some of his shooting woes and maybe hesitancy to drive on a hip injury that wasn't talked about all year? Or is that just kind of one of those athletes getting cleaned up in the offseason that happens quite a bit?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a medical professional. I've never had a torn hip labrum or whatever he's dealing with. So I don't know necessarily how that affects you. But looking back and kind of thinking about some things that you see throughout the season and you saw throughout the season, it was pretty clear at times that he was not always comfortable. I always thought, honestly, it might have been the back, because he always had his hand kind of on his back. And even saw him warming up against NC State with the belt that Warren Washington had on, that I believe is like heated and does some compression stuff as well. And so I thought it might have been a back, and that would have kind of made sense to me. But obviously, if you're dealing with something that's painful, it's going to affect your play one way or another. But yeah, I mean, outside of that, I don't really know why. I thought Joe Toussaint especially did a good job of it in the first half. But in the second half, I think you were only down maybe 7 points going into half, maybe even slimmer than that. But it just kind of felt like you kind of panicked almost, tried to start shooting yourself back into the game and kind of chipping into the easy looks that they were getting, because it almost felt like you knew you weren't going to be able to stop them. So that was kind of tough.
This is more of a commentary on the season as a whole, but it also applied to Thursday night's game. If your game is inhibited by a serious injury to the extent that it harms your performance as much as it's now being alleged, you should probably not be shooting at pretty much a historic volume for somebody shooting as badly as you are. Like, there's some different data points out there. Brian, I think you have maybe posted a couple of these. Emery Lida did as well, that like, I think 15 players in the last 10 years or something have shot as many times as Pop while shooting as low of a percentage as him. So like, if his hip was bothering him and he couldn't play up to his potential because of that, we have other guys on the team like Chance McMillan, Kerwin Walton, whoever, that maybe we could have distributed the ball to a little bit more. So is it a valid excuse? Like, I'm sure it did affect his performance, but if that's the case, I think the strategy should also change. Like, when Baron Morton's shoulder was hurt all season last year, you know, they weren't really trying a bunch of 50-yard downfield bombs. They adjusted because it was the best they could do. So that kind of makes it more frustrating. Like, I do think basketball players should kind of try to shoot through slumps, and that you can hurt their confidence a lot by telling them to not shoot. But if he was physically unable to play up to his potential all year, then I think we should have found ways to kind of try to minimize his volume rather than maximize it. I think that was kind of completely backwards.
Question here on West Virginia's new coach. We will talk about that, because that has some implications on Oklahoma State's job search too. Oklahoma State's target also might be going to Vanderbilt. I saw this afternoon, so lots of implications there on Oklahoma State. Doug Gottlieb, more and more true every day to be the head coach. I really want that to happen. We'll talk about that in a second. Let's keep going on Texas Tech. We talked about regular season grades, and obviously you're just two or three games removed from that. Does the season grade change with a first-round loss, or are you kind of where you were, B+, A-, great season for coming in late, and you expect more in year two? Has that changed at all?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't move the needle too much. Obviously, it hurts. Like, I hate just watching other teams play right now. I wish it was Tech, and I think, like, the first thing I did after Oakland beat Kentucky was look at prices for the Sweet 16 in American Airlines Center, because that's 20 minutes away from me, and I'm like, well, maybe you've really got yourself a chance here. And so losing in March sucks. The last two games of your season were not fun for different reasons. Obviously, Houston's a great team. You were banged up. I don't think you were ever really trying to win that game, mainly because you just didn't have the manpower. But yeah, to kind of close out those two games, not fun. But I think overall, when you consider the whole body of work, the way that McCaslin even adjusted his own scheme and preferences to really maximize the talent that he had on this roster, I think it's still a very promising outlook. But I think you're definitely, you know, left wanting at least a win in next year's tournament.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it puts a damper on the season as a whole. I mean, partly because I didn't expect them to get this far in the first place. And I understand expectations can kind of change as the season goes along. But yeah, I think zooming out, this is still a pretty good season. As you told me, we were going to be a 6 seed at the beginning of the year. I probably just straight up wouldn't have believed it. And then you factor in all the injuries, even though a couple of those guys were able to play, I think clearly they were not at full strength. So I don't think it really tarnishes the grade I would give McCaslin. I would still say A. Think, I don't know, I saw some crap on social media about like how McCaslin needed to learn his lesson from this game, and like the guy hasn't won everywhere he's ever been at every level, including in the NCAA tournament against good teams like 4-seed Purdue. So, and I think I called that before the game, was that if we did get bounced round one, there's going to be this narrative about the big game and choking, and I just think it's unwarranted. Like, McCaslin has been at a Power 6 program 1 year, and yes, went one and done. But it's hard to win NCAA tournament games. Like, there are other programs with more resources than you that struggle to get past the first weekend. So I'll tweet today that, like, Baylor, Kansas, Virginia each have won a natty in the last 5 years, and in the other 4 years have not advanced past the second round. It's hard to win games in March, and I know people kind of know that, but when they get emotionally invested in it and you do make two Elite Eights back-to-back and a Sweet 16 shortly after that, like, we haven't been one and done since Tubby Smith, and this is the third head coach since Tubby Smith. So I get it, but, I mean, you're just not – the game that was on the same floor right before you, Kentucky lost to Oakland, which is not even a school in California. Apparently it's in Michigan. I didn't know they existed until that day. So it's hard to win in March. I think if 5 years from now McCaslin keeps going one and done, then maybe we can start to talk about it. But his career at D2 as an assistant coach at North Texas, he wins conference tournaments, he wins CBI, he wins NIT. And he won an NCAA tournament game in North Texas. So I think a lot of that was a reach.
Yeah, Kyle, and you and I got a text this afternoon saying, what do we feel about Mr. NIT now? That is the narrative. He can win at the lower level, but maybe he can't win now at the big level. He did win this year. There's also the thought process going around that I've seen quite a bit today, especially on Twitter, that the Big 12 is overrated because they've lost a bunch of tournament games. Well, you still have Houston, you still have Iowa State, your two best teams in the Sweet 16 now. Well, Houston is currently playing, they're up Only three on Texas A&M, the 1-9 seed. So we'll see how that game goes. If Houston loses, maybe we do start talking about the Big 12 being overrated. Money, what do you think going through the tournament and how the Big 12 has looked? Overrated, underrated, the ACC getting a lot of love because of their success, but you're not the SEC, certainly, but where does the Big 12 stand here in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, somebody asked Matt Painter a question, I think it was yesterday, heading into the Utah State game, and kind of asked him, like, hey, looking at this team, historically, you're way better than them, you have way more resources, you've won these kind of games a lot. You know, how do you feel heading into this game? And he just kind of leveled with the guy and was like, every team in the NCAA tournament is good. Once you get to the round of 32, every team is really good. And so I really think generalizations about conferences in the tournament are kind of redundant because obviously you have to play to get here. And once you get here, everything is very different than it is in the regular season. The style of play changes. It's more guard heavy. It's harder to kind of play your game. Your bench is shortened. And so I think there are a lot of factors that go into it other than just, hey, this conference sucks. This conference is great. Although it is pretty hilarious to see the SEC with as poor of a track record as they've had this season. That said, Alabama just beat Grand Canyon and we'll head to the Sweet 16.
Speaking of Matt Painter, he's a guy who's been to some Sweet 16s, four Sweet 16s, five Sweet 16s, and Elite Eight. But he's also got four first-round exits in the last 8 years. In the beginning of his career, had a bunch of second-round exits. But he's been at Purdue, I didn't realize, for almost 20 years now. I didn't think he'd been there that long. But it's just an interesting career arc that he's had. George in the YouTube comments says, I'll get the coaching job this year, a rare blood type, the AB negative, with the negative only due to the lack of adjustments during the NC State game. What adjustments were to be made to go back to that NC State game one more time? I mean, what adjustment was there for Burns besides maybe pulling another guy down? And if you did, wouldn't that just open up the other 6'10 center or Middlebrooks to get even more of what they were getting? It's one thing if you just have Burns on the floor, but Burns was the power forward. You also had a center there. So I don't know. It just, I don't know that there were many adjustments to be made. I think it really was just more of a mismatch than we gave it, credit for going into the game.
Yeah, I think the one thing I saw a lot was like, call a double, like go put two guys on him. What is Pop Isaacs going to do against DJ Burns? What is Joe Toussaint going to do against DJ Burns? Like the one guy I think you might have wanted to try it with is Darion Williams, but he was in foul trouble, as was most of your team. All those guys are going to do are either get a tie up reaching for the ball or get a foul on a reach in or creating some contact against him. And so I think, sure, there's some merit to saying like, hey, why didn't we try something? But with your personnel that you have, with your guards being in the foul trouble that they were in, I really do think it just would have made things worse. As crazy as that sounds, because they dominated you down low and it was hard to watch. I mean, your entire team would have fouled out and you would have been left with DJ Horn wide open, who's a problem, Middlebrooks getting easier looks, Giara, who played a really good game, him getting even easier looks. And so I can understand it.
Agree or disagree with this statement? Because in part, because McCaslin arrived late in Lubbock, he was not able to or did not build a talented and as deep of a roster as we hoped or could expect going forward.
Certainly in the front court, I think the depth could be questioned, but you also had an injury there early But you only had one true center on the roster. The comment earlier said that there were two true centers. I guess they were calling Devin Cambridge a center. But, I mean, really all the depth you had was 6'8", 6'7". So, yeah, I think there was an issue talent-wise, especially at the center position, yeah.
I mean, we played seven guys. Two of them were hurt, and one of them was in foul trouble basically 30 seconds after checking into the game every time he came in, yeah. Forcing you to play the tired and injured guys. I get that the season is a gauntlet and a lot of teams deal with injury. I think for the most part we handled it well. I mean, we won a lot of games against solid competition without Devin Cambridge and or Warren Washington. So I think that's another thing fans can look forward to being quote-unquote fixed going forward. I would think and hope that by year two, year three of this, you have more than seven guys capable of playing in an NCAA tournament game. And maybe then you do have personnel that you can make adjustments with. Because you're right, like rolling Pop Isaacs down to double DJ Burns probably isn't going to do it. But if you've got some athletic 6'8 guy on the bench, maybe you could. We didn't have that luxury this year. I'm still very bullish on this staff's ability to identify and develop talent from the portal. So I think we can expect and hope that the personnel and depth next year and years going forward is going to exceed what we saw this year. And I still think this was a good team with some good pieces. So I'm not trying to talk down on them at all. I'm just saying I think it'll get even better.
That's a pretty good segue there. Bruce says in the Twitter comments, I'm late getting in, what kind of recruits are coming in next year? Obviously, no idea. It's way too early. But I do think, Money, you had a couple of maybe positional archetypes that you might want to go after. Who are some, not names, but types of players that would fit McCaslin's year two scheme?
Yeah, and I'll say to Bruce's point, if you're asking about high school recruits, right now it's none. And that's probably not going to change because it's almost April. You might get a late hit. You might get a walk-on who you kind of try and keep at the end of your bench. But it's going to be all portal guys, which I personally have no issue with because I think that's kind of proven to be the best way to win, especially in a conference as good as the Big 12, is putting experienced guys on your roster who have proven that they can play college basketball. You'll probably want to develop some of that high school recruiting down the line. But right now, I think I'm totally fine with just throwing in some transfers. I think there are really two to three archetypes that come to mind. Two of them, I think, are very high priorities. One of them is an athletic big man. Like, I want a guy who can move his feet, who can rebound well, who can defend the rim. Ideally, I always like a guy who can give you a little bit more on offense than just back to the basket. I think Warren Washington was kind of a good example of that because of his passing ability. Now, we only saw it for about 10 Big 12 games because of his injury, but your offense was really good whenever you could just kind of run the pick and roll, get the ball to him at the top of the key, and he could make a pass. Like, he was more than comfortable doing that. And so I think kind of looking for a big man who obviously does the things that you want out of a big man, which is rebound well, add size, run the pick and roll. I always look for a guy that can either pass the ball a little bit or even shoot the ball a little bit, because those are huge bonuses. A couple of guys Tech has contacted. I'm trying to keep up with who Tech is calling right now, but it's madness. And it will continue to be as the portal just grows, as these games come to a close. But Amari Williams out of Drexel, he's 6'11". He's going into his fifth year of college basketball. He's primarily a back-to-the-basket guy, but I really like the way that his rim protection looks on film. He's athletic, moves his feet well. Brandon Garrison, Oklahoma State, kind of raw. Not as experienced as some of the other guys that you might be looking at. And I don't know if you want to do that, because if you return Yolajo and Jennings, I think you've got two guys who are still kind of coming on, finding their role, but he's got a lot of length. He's got a good wingspan. He's a very, very smart basketball player, especially for only being a freshman last year. And then DJ Burns, no, not that one, but the one out of Youngstown State. He is 6'7", and I think immediately a lot of people see that and are just like, I want nothing to do with it. He played the four this year, which I imagine is what he'd play in the Big 12. I love his film, man. He is super athletic, shoots the three well, really, really great offensive rebounder. I think that's kind of a piece that you might want to slide in here. Second archetype is an efficient and experienced lead guard. If Pop Isaacs is back next season, as it seems he will be, I believe that was said after the game on Thursday, I think you kind of want to put a piece next to him that maximizes his strengths and minimizes his weaknesses. So with that, you're going to be looking for a guy that can initiate the offense, run the pick and roll, defend well, rebound well, and then make good quality shots on pretty low volume. You definitely don't want two high volume guys in your backcourt that are low efficiency. I think Joe Toussaint was close to a complimentary piece for Pop Isaacs. I think it's fair to say there were times this season where I was kind of wanting more. But the two things that Joe Toussaint did best this season were play good defense. He was a great defender for most of the season, great on-ball defender. And then he was good initiating the offense, had some turnover struggles at times. I think he tried to get too fancy, tried to force it at times. But he was the leader in assists for this team this year. And I think that kind of played out on film. So some guys there, I'm going to butcher this name. I'm sorry, I suck at names. JP Baguez out of Furman. He is 6'1", going into his fourth year. Really, really good in the pick and roll. He can create his own shot. He's a good catch and shoot guy. That's a guy I really, really want. And then Jordan Sears out of UT Martin, obviously kind of interesting whenever you're going to that level. 21 points per game last season, going into his fifth year, made 76 of his 106 three-point shots last year, 97th percentile catch and shoot guy. That's a guy that I'm really intrigued on. He did have three turnovers per game. That's kind of something I'm a little bit worried about, sliding him next to Pop at this level, but I think the scoring is definitely there. The third archetype, I haven't seen Tech contact many of these guys, but I think a 3-and-D wing is a kind of archetype that you've seen do really well in this program, that you've seen do really well in this conference. And so I think kind of getting a guy that can give you some length on the wing and also make his shots, play good defense, that's a guy that you're going to want to go after.
When you start talking about new guys to the roster, you always obviously have to talk about who's leaving. Warren Washington done with eligibility. You have Joe Toussaint done with eligibility. I would assume Kyron Lindsey is not coming back. Chance McMillan, I believe, said after the tournament that he would return to use his final year of eligibility. Darian Williams. Obviously, I think returning Joe Toussaint, not Joe Toussaint, Pop Isaacs, probably returning. Kerwin Walton. Is there a super senior? Did he make any kind of announcement yet?
He does have an extra year, I believe, but I've not seen anything on him or Williams. Those are the two that I'm kind of watching right now. Not speaking of Demarion Williams, who I believe will be leaving as well because he did not travel with the team to the tournament, and that's a pretty good indicator that you're not going to be back.
All right. Let's see. I'm going to go, before we get to anything else, I want to jump into the mailbag because there are a lot of NC State NCAA tournament questions. So we can get some of those out of the way before we move on to some spring football and maybe a little baseball. And obviously all the Eli Manning talk that you can handle. What was your worst first round pick? I think collectively in our bracket, New Mexico was our worst pick. Did you guys have any personal picks that were worse than New Mexico?
Did we have New Mexico in the Final Four?
It was very close to the Final Four, yes.
I can't believe I let y'all talk me into that.
I'm gonna try to go find that bracket. I don't remember where we made it.
I mean, at least we kind of nailed Baylor not advancing through that region. Is that a silver lining?
Sure.
And I also had Tech in the Final Four. And Money was trying to veto that. Rob, I think, caved toward the end of the episode. So we might have missed two Final Four teams on the first day of the tournament or in the first round. So it's not great when that happens.
Yeah, I was high on McNeese State. They absolutely pooped the bed in the first round.
Do you know why they lost, Ryan?
Tell me.
It's because Ja Morant did not walk through that door. Not that he went to McNeese State, but he probably could have helped. But nevertheless, he didn't walk through that door.
You always need a shooter to help. We nailed James Madison. That was one of our good picks over Wisconsin. We got brutalized in the rest, in the bottom half of this bracket. We had obviously Kentucky and Texas Tech. We had Florida over Colorado. Marquette beating Colorado today. We did have Marquette moving on. So we have Marquette, Duke, and Houston there in the Sweet 16. So we had those teams.
We almost picked Samford, and Samford almost won.
We did end up going with Kansas. And then Gonzaga, Purdue. Purdue winning that game. Purdue. Oh, that's the Sweet 16 game. Sorry. We did not have Gonzaga. We had Creighton and Tennessee. We had Texas and Tennessee playing, and then Tennessee moving on. We do not have any. We got, speaking of getting brutalized, the West, where that was our chaos bracket. Not good. Not good. We didn't pick Michigan State. We didn't have Alabama advancing. I think we had Grand Canyon there. Or St. Mary's. We had St. Mary. Oh, we didn't even pick Grand Canyon. Yeah, that's bad. Let's see. But we did do pretty well in the East. UConn, Northwestern, San Diego State, Illinois, Washington State, Iowa State were all right picks. And then Illinois, Iowa State, right picks. UConn currently beating Northwestern. So the only one we missed there was Auburn. So that was our best region. Otherwise, not great. We're ranking, let's see, 2 millionth.
Out of how many?
I don't know.
What's the percentile? Does it tell you?
It's not on ESPN, so.
Oh.
Yeah, bracket challenge, let's see.
I haven't checked mine yet to see where I'm at. I'm pretty sure as an emotional head, I had Texas going to the Natty, so that's going to hurt.
Yeah.
But it didn't hurt watching them lose to Rick Barnes. That was, especially in a game that Rick Barnes tried his hardest to lose at the end, they still couldn't beat him. It's pretty funny.
He's not a great coach, but he is pretty rough.
The series that really pissed me off, I thought Tennessee was trying to lose it on purpose. Texas had like 4 team fouls, and they're fouling over and over to get into the bonus. Tennessee has 2 timeouts, so there's like 20 seconds left in the game at this point. After foul number 6, if I'm Rick Barnes, I'm calling timeout to regroup, like get my free throw shooters in the game, telling them, hey, if we can't inbound it here, we have another timeout. Let's try to inbound it to these 2 guys because they're our 2 best free throw shooters. Instead, he just lets it play out, and they inbound it to a 62% free throw shooter, the worst free throw shooter on the floor. He made them both, thankfully, but I was just like, what are you doing, man? You taking those 2 timeouts with you to the next round? Or, like, what's going on here? Infuriating to watch, but I'm glad he made them.
It's a player's game. You got to let it play out. Poncho says, who's the softest basketball player in America, and why is it BYU's Khalifa? Man, he did not have a very good showing there in his first round matchup. Let's see. Is Texas Tech the little brother of NC State? Yeah, you got a football and a basketball loss in the last 3 seasons, 2 seasons. Any comment there, Kyle?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Is Texas Tech the little brother of NC State?
I don't know. I mean, a lot of teams have beaten us in a regular season football game over the last however many years.
Yeah.
If they want to claim that, then sure.
Why did Mainville forget to inform us of this white guy from NC State?
Because he was nobody.
The game of his life.
I mean, seriously. Like, he just came out of nowhere. I watched a lot of NC State film heading into that game, and I was never like, oh, this guy might be a problem. Like, he kind of came out of nowhere.
Rob, you said your bracket ranks 2 millionth?
That was the combined bracket on like NCAA.com.
This is the worst bracket I've ever done. You want to know where I'm sitting right now?
Oh, on your personal? Yes.
22 millionth. I'm in the top 17.5 percentile. Now, I've started slow in the past, and then if you get four of the Elite Eight right, then you're kind of cooking. We'll see. I need Arizona to probably win it all. Let's see who my Final Four was. I know Texas was one of them. I might have more than one Final Four team already out. It's not loading, and nobody cares. But, yeah, I filled out a really bad bracket on my own time as well. So, apologies for that. Hand up.
I've not looked at my – I fill out my bracket. I don't look at it until the end. See what I did. Am I wrong that I only want to see Chance and D5 back next year? That's a question in the mailbag.
I would also want Kerwin back. I would also want Cambridge back. And I kind of like, I mean, as long as you feel like you're not running out of roster spots, I kind of like the trajectory of EY and Bob Jennings. Maybe there's not room for both of them, but at least one or the other. So, yeah, I want more pieces back than just two. I saw a gripe about Kerwin's, like, defense or all that, but whatever. He's an elite role player at what he does, though. Like, to shoot 48% from three, which was top one or two in the country, you don't necessarily need him to be a five-tool player for him to still be a net positive to the roster. So maybe he doesn't ever round into this complete player that can do three or four different things for you. But if he does that one thing really, really, really well, which clearly he demonstrated this year that he can do it, I'm fine with him using up a roster spot. He doesn't have to be a starter, but if that's like your third, fourth guy on the bench, I think that's awesome.
He also is much improved defensively this year from last year. So maybe even year three at a school that cares about defense, he gets even better if he plays again. Shout out Iowa State. Assuming the gaps on the basketball roster are filled next season, if we get to see D5 play the three instead of the four, do you think he'll dominate against smaller guards?
Basketball is positionless. I honestly think that he'll kind of end up playing more of the four anyways, just because you would be rolling out essentially a lineup with two guards, D5, two big men. And I would assume one of those big men probably only plays like 20 minutes a night, just because that's kind of how it goes in this conference. But I mean, yeah, if we're talking about like who do we absolutely need back, like who do we empty the truck for, it's Darion Williams for sure. Been saying that for like a month, but man, if you lose him, and there's no like chatter about that I've seen or heard. It's just like that is absolutely a guy that I want back in my program. He's still learning the game of basketball. Like this was his second season and he got better this year than when he was a conference player of the year last year. Like he is going to be a really, really, really good basketball player. And he was probably the best player on this team this year.
If he comes back to Texas Tech and we have a roster that is a marginal upgrade over this year's, what would you set the over under his points, rebounds, assists per game next year? Or like his shooting splits? I mean, give me an idea of like what you'd be expecting out of him in year three on this team.
Shooting splits would be tough. He shot 46% from deep this year, which kind of feels like it's almost due for a regression because that's insane. I mean, his volume was not high, but he was very efficient. I would say points over 13.5. And I would take the over on that. Rebounds over 8. I think he ended up averaging 7.5 this year. So he's probably due for more there. I think even assists, I would probably take the over probably up to 3.5. Because I really like the flashes that he showed there. And I think if you get the right pieces around him, you can kind of let him take over some of that heavy lifting of initiating the offense. But I mean, his jumps, even compared to last year, playing in a much harder conference, it's really impressive to look at. Like, he's plus 4 points per game where he was last year. His assist numbers went down a little bit, but I want to look at the rate stats because those are always a little bit better. Rebound rate is up. I mean, he's progressively gotten better.
So, I mean, it's not out of the realm that he could be flirting with 15, 10, and 5 next year. Maybe he doesn't hit all three of those and average it on a nightly basis. But, like, if there's 18 to 12 games in several of them, he could have a stat line similar to that. And I think you're right. I don't think he'll shoot 46% from three next year. But if he shoots 40 or 38, like, that's still really good, especially if he's starting to do it at a higher volume. I have a comment from Mooney that he thinks D5 will go 50, 40, 90 next year. Could see it happening. Maybe the free throws don't jump that much, but even if he's a hair under those numbers with everything else he could do on the basketball court, I'm totally with you. I know we've talked about it before, kind of beating a dead horse at this point, but I think he'll be the best player on your team next year, the most important player on your team. If he's not the best player on the team, it means we've probably got an absolute stud out of the portal. So you pretty much like can't oversell me on the D5 hype machine for next year. I'm really looking forward to that.
I mean, even in just conference games, he was 53, 52, 88. Like, that is absurd. That is crazy efficiency.
Was NC State beating Texas Tech the first time America's team didn't fold under pressure? I think that's a failed shot at the Dallas Cowboys. We'll move on. Should we be surprised? Well, hold on. I'm going to leave that one for Wednesday. Let's see. Who would have had more halftime adjustments against NC State, Coach Gass or Coach Adams? That's at 12:06 on Friday morning after the game. I want to say that guy might have been drinking a little bit, putting that question in.
I think we've covered this. I don't really know how you're supposed to adjust to them just, I don't know, making shots 1 foot from the rim repeatedly when you have, like, nobody else that you can put down low other than a guy with a broken toe or whatever Warren Washington has.
I have a question for Money. What is an offensive foul? Because, especially in this game, the charge was gone this year. We know that. We watch basketball all year. They certainly made that a point of emphasis to not call as many charges. You have to be in position. But absolutely torquing your body with elbows flailed into the chest of the opposing player, if he doesn't flop, how is that not an offensive foul more often than it was called? Like, was I going crazy watching DJ Burns put his full elbow into the chest of Robert Jennings and not getting foul calls at all? Well, he got two of them, but I feel like he should have gotten five.
Yeah, I think he had one at the very beginning of the game that they got him on, and then one closer to the second half that I don't think he was too fond of. I think that was right before he got benched because he was running hot.
His dad was incredulous.
Oh, yeah. But I don't know, man. Like, I always look for extension of the arm. Like, that's kind of one of the big things I look for. My thing with him is just, like, how do you not call an offensive foul on everything he does just because it looks like he's bullying you?
Yeah.
Like, he's just running you over. And so I think part of it is it's hard to call whenever he's plus 100 pounds on the guy defending him. But I also think, yeah, you've got to watch the arms and you've got to watch the extension of the elbow.
I think if we had flopped every time he touched the ball, we would have had like a 50% hit rate on getting a call. And Bob Jennings, I think, actually did a good job not getting just moved out of place that much. I was like, plant your feet and fall down. Like, he's scoring anyway, even when you're standing up. Just fall down and, like, see if we can get a call here. And again, they kind of got him in foul trouble. He didn't play as many minutes as I'm sure he wanted to the first 25, 30 minutes of that ball game. But still, yeah, I mean, he's kind of getting away with the lockdown there. But then again, I mean, his backup came in and didn't miss, so I'm not really sure it mattered. I'm not trying to blame the refs here.
Yeah, he flopped once. It might have been in the first half, but they did not call a foul, and I thought almost certainly he was going to get a flop warning because it was not as egregious of a back down as Burns had had at points in that game. But he just kind of laid down on the floor, and I was like, man, they're about to get him on this one, but they didn't call it.
Yeah, take the fall, act hurt, get indignant. When will we receive a formal apology from Kyle for passing the Gauchos curse onto the Red Raiders this year?
I don't know. The Gauchos curse seemed to have dodged us when we finished fourth in the Big 12 and beat Kansas by 29 and all this good stuff happened. So I think there's just an issue with grown men kind of having trouble coping with a sports team losing. So they look for – it's kind of like the conspiracy theorist, you know? It's like, I can't deal with the world as it is, so I'm going to make up some insane thing to cope with reality. And so if you were crying on your couch at midnight after we lost NC State, like, well, this is Kyle's fault. Okay. I mean, that's on you, though, not me.
Are you saying you don't believe in any conspiracy theories?
I'm saying there ain't no curses.
Okay. I do think that stems from the actual tournament, not the regular season, but I can concede with where you're coming from.
Yeah, so if Tech ever loses anything, it's the Gauchos curse. If we win even throughout the course of an entire season, then there's no Gauchos curse. That makes sense. That's very philosophically consistent.
It's true. Are we picking a Big 12 team moving forward, or are we just going to let it ride?
Obviously, I think you got them on your lid right now.
They've already won, so no curse to be had, obviously, going into the Sweet 16. It's all gravy from there. Let's see. I think we can save that one for Wednesday. This is interesting. Thoughts on my idea for a new college basketball postseason format. We've had a lot of these in the last couple of weeks. Fran Fischilla has put about 17 different options on his Twitter feed. I've hated all of them.
Your boy.
My boy, Fran Fischilla. This is from Luke Street. He says, keep the tournament at 64 teams. Abolish conference tournaments. Every first place conference finisher gets the auto bid from the regular season. And then create 16-team play-in tournaments for the last four seeds in each region. Basically, semifinals in these tournaments guaranteed spot in NCAA tournament, then play for a seed after that. So take away conference tournaments and then replace it with a bigger NCAA tournament play-in game tournament.
I can't even follow what that was. If we're going to expand the tournament, I'm fine with 72 and making the first four a first eight. I saw the math on this. You play eight games in Dayton, so like the final 16 teams coming in have to earn their way in. I think that's fine, but Let's write this into the contract. If we expand to 72, no more expansion of the field for 25 years. Because college football right now, I swear there's a new playoff format every week. They're like, oh, it's 12, oh, it's 14, and I'm going to wake up tomorrow, it'll be 18. And so you just pick one and do it for a little while and quit changing the format every year. And basketball hasn't quite done that. 64 for the longest time, then they invented this first four. I think that's okay, but if we let them do 72, it'll be 84, then 96, and it'll never stop. Then every team will make the tournament. Like, there has to be a stopping point. You have to earn your way in at some point.
Gauchos, on a scale of 1 to 10, how fun is the 2024-25 athletic year going to be? You have high expectations for football and basketball next year?
I have not yet even quantified or put into precise terms just how high I am on next year's football team. I think most of that will probably come out via Patreon over the course of this offseason. So if you want the offseason Kool-Aid, I would say join us there. But yeah, football is as fun as I think it'll be. The rest kind of won't even matter. But I think basketball will get better. Football, like people, they can't right now conceive, they can't wrap their minds around how good we're going to be at football.
We'll get there. We'll get there in this episode. Hold on. This is from Matt Zenitz, a Kentucky basketball analyst. This is just the second time in Kentucky basketball history that the Wildcats have gone four straight seasons without advancing past the second round of the NCAA tournament. The only other time, 2005 to 2009, under the combination of which two coaches, Money?
Is that Billy G? Is he in there?
And? Oh, you got it. Texas Tech legend.
Tubby Smith?
Tubby Smith. So the question is here, does this all but guarantee Coach Cal is the next head coach of Texas Tech basketball? Be interesting. Hopefully it's in a decade after he's 80 and Coach Gass has gone on a good run. There's not a question in the mailbag, but there was a question here, or at least a comment. Just be like Bill Self. He was already ready for next season, he said. What are your thoughts on Bill Self in the press conference saying that a month ago he had turned his sights, not in game time, he quickly caught himself, but had turned his sights on next season? There was a tweet from a Texas Tech fan that showed his ejection and saying that was the moment he was looking forward to next season. Is it wild as I think it is that a Power Five, especially a Bill Self level head coach, basically says he punted on the final month of the season?
That's absurd, especially at a program like Kansas. Like, coming from anywhere, from any head coach, it's wild. It's a stupid thing to say. If I'm a player, I'm like, hey, man, what the hell? I just poured hours of energy into this program, tons of early morning practices. Like, if you read anything about off seasons at Kansas, like, those guys are in the gym 5 a.m. all day. Obviously, the program has huge expectations of what you are to do, how you are to perform, even like absolutely grilling Kevin McCuller whenever he was out for the NCAA tournament. Like, that program has so many eyes on it. The expectations are so high that I'm thinking, like, coach, what are we doing here? Like, if you're not going to care, if you're going to check out, why should I not do the same? But that was absurd. Like, I saw that and I was like, is this fake? Like, I saw the quote on the video and I had to actually watch the video because I was like, no way this is real. Like, somebody made like a birder account and posted some unrelated video with an audio overlay, but it was very real.
Was it taken out of context? Like, I was preparing for next year while also focused on this year.
He legitimately said, I started thinking of next season a month ago, and you could see him mentally say, oh, that was bad to say out loud. And then he said, well, not during games. I was focused during games, but otherwise I was focused on next season.
Yeesh.
Thomas says, imagine a player saying that. They'd get dragged and labeled as selfish. Well, you know, we can't imagine that because Kevin McCuller did it the week before. We didn't talk about Kevin before the tournament. We could have on the Wednesday episode, obviously. He too injured to play. Did you read between the lines as much as I did with Hunter Dickinson's comments before the tournament and some of the other teammates from Kansas, Harris's comments that maybe they didn't love that Kevin McCuller wasn't trying to give it a go? Or was I just reading too much into it?
A lot I could potentially say on this topic. I think is Occam's razor the one that's like the most likely explanation is probably the correct one.
Yeah.
I think I'll leave it at this. I think that Kevin McCuller has a reputation that was at least to some extent well-earned. And if you apply that reputation in this instance, you probably have a pretty good idea of what happened.
That maybe McCuller's in business for McCuller.
I mean, the fact that his head coach went on Twitter to address basically Kansas burner accounts talking noise on Twitter, like the day that they were playing in the NCAA tournament.
Oh, man.
I don't know what you call this phenomenon, but there's something to be said. Like, if you get on an airplane and you're, like, on the tarmac about to take off and the pilot says, hey, just so everybody knows, we did refuel and we have plenty of jet fuel to get to New York. You'd, like, turn your neighbor and be like, well, I wasn't worried that we had enough fuel until he said that. Now I'm like, okay, is there an issue with the fuel? I think Steve Mnuchin did that when he was Secretary of the Treasury. Something. He was like, hey, just so everybody knows, the like financial market is totally safe and not about to collapse globally. And then people were like, why did he just say that? Is it? So when Bill Self comes, he's like, hey, just so everybody on Twitter knows, Kevin McCullough isn't just ducking this game, even though he could play through the injury, you know. And it was 5,000 words of me just like, you know, I ain't reading all that. I think it kind of spells out what happened.
George says, I don't know if you guys agree, but I've enjoyed watching Terrence Shannon play well for Illinois while McCullough had to be shelved. Yeah, he's playing great. I don't know if enjoyed is the right word. I've been incredibly jealous that he's played well for Illinois. I wish that could have been worked out to where he stayed at Texas Tech. I know there were some rumors at the time that he wanted to stay and kind of got pushed out by the former regime. So I wish that had turned out differently. Yeah.
Kyle's Kimball Walker take is looking more and more viable the more games that they play. I think he's scored over 30 in both of the first two games that he's played so far.
I think that was Rob, actually, who made the Kimba and March comp. Wish I could take credit for it.
Sorry, Rob.
You could have, Kyle. It's all right.
Do you think – I saw this either on Twitter or on Red Raider Sports, but somebody was like, do you think that a roster – of currently active players that transferred away from Texas Tech could make the NCAA tournament in advance?
Yes.
I think the answer, if you put TJ Shannon, a healthy Kevin McCullough, Daniel Bacho with the season he had, I'm sure I'm missing others. Yeah, Vlad Golden.
Buzo.
Yeah, like they're a Sweet 16, I don't want to say lock, but like contender, right? Like that's probably a six seed,
yeah, five seed. You might not have Kevin McCullough could play point guard. Sorry.
Finally.
I mean, you have
Malik Wilson.
Yeah, Malik Wilson. Yeah, some defense. They would certainly make the tournament, depending on what conference they were in. I think maybe even in a good conference, they could make the tournament.
Jalen Tyson.
Kyle's favorite, Fardos Amak.
Fardos. Dude, yeah, they'd be salty.
I think
Namari Burnett off the bench.
Why I legitimately not? Think everyone who played for Mark Adams that left Mark Adams could have beat this year's Texas Tech team. Am I wrong? Pretty crazy.
Wild.
This is an interesting conversation starter, and generally I would leave it till Wednesday, but, you know.
Micah Peavy?
Good grief.
All right, next question.
They're just coming.
Let's stop. I think we've got 13 scholarships there.
Tyreek Smith.
Was he still at Oklahoma State?
He played for SMU this year, I believe.
SMU, that's right. Tyreek Smith. He's probably the 14th guy on the list.
This doesn't count, but Davide Moretti's brother is also on Illinois' roster.
Yeah. He was 0-for-1 with no points, but
If he's number 13 on the roster, I mean,
Big Russ. I think that was a beard departure.
Before. Oh, Big Russ.
Andre Savarsov is playing for Duquesne.
This team is like a Final Four squad.
He's on Duquesne. I didn't notice that.
He is on Duquesne, man.
Wow, that is incredible. Wow. I'm going to burn through a couple, then I have a good one. Texas Tech hasn't won a tournament game since Kyle moved to Fort Worth. Is everything Kyle's fault? Then we have Tech started sucking since Kyle.
Hold up. Wait. Rob, you're a lifelong Rangers fan, right?
Sure.
When did that franchise begin operations?
1971, 71.
How many World Series titles before I lived in Tarrant County?
Zero.
How many since I lived in Tarrant County?
One.
Out of how many opportunities?
One. Yeah. We're undefeated.
All right.
Okay. Did Kyle just rip a vape?
No, I don't have a vape on me.
I wish Kyle was a vapor. That'd be funny. Tech started sucking since Kyle blocked me live on Twitter. Is he the root cause? You're getting ripped today, Kyle. You're getting ripped so much you might just quit and never come back.
Seriously.
I wanted to ask you this, Kyle, for sure. I want to get this one in for you. Do we deserve to get memed on by all the UT fans for the trash talk going into this season? You did clarify in the mailbag, is this a basketball question? And he says about all sports.
I think in basketball, I know they made it one round further. I think you had a pretty equal basketball season to them. 1-1 head-to-head. They lose to a coach they fired for not going past the first weekend often enough in an attempt to get past the first weekend. You finish higher than them in the regular season standing. So I think basketball is kind of a wash. You know, they beat you on your home court, you beat them on their home court. Football was an ass whipping. We all know that. Baseball, I think both baseball teams are not probably very good. They've always had the baseball and football advantage. I think basketball of the three is like by far the most competitive all time. And in terms of like both programs, ceilings historically and all that. So, and I don't know who I guess it was referencing in the question, like for all the offseason trash talk. I certainly don't remember guaranteeing going into Austin and winning a football game. But I do think it's interesting that all the success Texas is having, they're still interested in Texas Tech. And I think it was Raider Ty. He quote tweeted somebody, some Texas fan, talking about how irrelevant Texas Tech was. And he was like, if we weren't relevant, y'all would have quit tweeting about us by now. But they're still doing it. I don't know what that says about the rivalry or the heart of the question being asked. But, yeah, if they want to make memes, I guess they're welcome to.
When it's incredible to me that their first thought in the NCAA tournament when Texas Tech loses is not to focus on their game, but to tweet a video of Joey McGuire in a locker room talking to his team saying everything runs through Lubbock.
That was funny because that might be what I'm thinking of. Raider Ty tweeted that video clip, or he quote tweeted the Texas fan that tweeted that video clip. And I was like, they might never recover from this. And two Texas fans completely missed the point. They're like, I'm pretty sure when we beat you by 50 that it all – and I'm like, yet you're still posting this video of McGuire 4 months after that football victory. So clearly that victory on the gridiron wasn't enough to unhurt your feelings forever. Like, y'all are going to be tweeting this video clip of Joey McGuire 10 years from now.
I have one Longhorn friend, and he talked about that locker room speech for 6 months. He would just text me randomly about that all through football season, every loss, into the every recruiting pitch, everything else. He would just be like, "Ah, running through Lubbock, huh?" And it's like, dude, that was to his team. It's like, well, they put it out there. It's like some social media guy put it out there. Joey didn't put it out there. Joey was talking to his team, and I was like, the profession this guy is in, the Longhorn fan. I was like, dude, like, you're in a position to give locker room talks. Like, you don't ever say things that the other team might not like. He's just like, no. Well, it's just wild. And now we're getting Ryan accused of vaping. Ryan, you hitting the vape over there?
Can't say I am. No.
I don't have the vape either, so I think we're all clear. Oh, now Kyle's off screen, just making it even more. All right. That was all the mailbag questions related to this week. We'll have more on Wednesday. Oh, no, there was one more. There was one more question I wanted to get to. Let me scroll back to it. I was saving it for the end. Kyle, you made an offhand comment that I think you made a bet that if Texas Tech didn't get to the Final Four, you would retire from the podcast. So the question is, since Tech fell just short of a natty, just short, does that mean Kyle is retiring from the pod officially? Do you have any statement on that?
I'll say this. I'm a man of my word.
Is that it?
I could Robfuscate this and say, you know, I didn't specify what year Tech would go to the Final Four or when I would retire or anything, but I'll just leave it there for now and say that I'm a man of my word, and I'll let the listener kind of take that answer and interpret it and digest it however they want, and then they can assess what they think of me after that.
Houston up 9, largest lead tonight, 13 and a half minutes to go. Spring football has begun. Not a ton of action in the spring football world. I did read a couple of stories this week from Don and the boys about spring football. Obviously, listen to Joey McGuire's comments. Let's see. Some players I remember from Don's writing and from Joey's press conferences. John Curry from Coronado has gained like 30 pounds. He's up to 225 at linebacker. I think your linebacker room, the inside linebackers look strong enough that you're going to move Dangle out to star. He mentioned Jalen Peoples, which, trivia question, who was the first high school signee committed to Joey McGuire ever?
Jalen Peoples.
Jalen Peoples from Cedar Hill High School. He has seemingly taken a big step in year 3 in the program. Him and Marion Horn could factor into that cornerback position pretty well. There was some offensive line talk. Ty Buchanan getting some mentions here in the spring. But it's too early really to get too far into it. But Kyle, you did say earlier on in the show, and I was going to give you time to expand on it, that the depths of your football impressions for the 2024 season have yet to be scratched. How high is the ceiling here in 2024 for Joey McGuire and the boys?
I think there's a chance. I don't know. It's early for that. I think you could be favored in like 10 games. What if Arizona is a bust? Like, you have to go there.
Yeah.
At Wazoo, I'm not sure how that'll be handicapped. I guess you have to go at TCU. Maybe they'll be better this year. But yeah, I mean, like, I think the schedule is very favorable. You don't play Kansas State. You don't play Utah. I think those three are kind of considered to be the top three in the conference. I think Tech fans were surprised to see Tech coming in like fourth or fifth in some of these preseason odds to win the conference or to make the playoffs and all that stuff, or, you know, fourth highest win total. But I think it's there for a reason. I think for the same reason Tech fans over the last, I don't know, 8 or 9 years before McGuire got here didn't realize why we were so bad, are now failing to understand before it happens why we're about to be so good, and that's just the talent coming through the door. It's not everything, but it's probably the number one component of what makes a team good or not. When you recruit 8th to 10th in the Big 12 for a decade, and then you finish 9th in that decade in terms of conference win percentage, to me that kind of adds up. And then you look at over the last 3 years where we've been recruiting at the top of the Big 12, and you've got fans that don't want to believe you can finish higher than 6th or 7th, doesn't quite square with me, especially when you have continuity at head coach, both coordinator positions, et cetera, and a favorable schedule. I think that no longer is there a program in the Big 12 that just blatantly outmatches you in terms of resources and infrastructure like there always was at Texas and OU, and further back than that, A&M, Nebraska, which – in the Mike Leach days, you had your fair share of beating those teams anyway. But that's how I look at it. I think the odds makers kind of know what they're talking about and know what they're basing this off of. A lot of it is predicated on staying healthy because you don't have a lot of experience or production at quarterback and running back behind your two starters. But yeah, I mean, I'm buying stock, and I think when this team goes like 10-2 next year, some people are going to be very surprised by it, and I will not be. I'll be pointing back to, hey, do you remember when we recorded that podcast in March and I told you it was going to be like this?
We'll be back when. Early adapter, Kyle Jacobson. Early adapter of the Joey McGuire era, early adapter of the success to come.
Hey, tell me why this team won't win 10 games.
They haven't in 20 years, 15 years.
Sure. How many of those seasons where they failed to win 10 games did they have a top two or three roster?
Zero, yeah.
How many times in those 20 years where they failed to win 10 games did they not have to face the three best teams in the conference or four of the five best teams in the conference?
Zero times, because you played around Robin most of those years.
How many times over that span when they failed to win 10 games were they just automatically outmatched the second they got off the bus?
Yeah, not every game, but certainly some.
Every year, multiple times. Every year, multiple times.
Yeah.
You know how many times that's going to happen this year?
Zero times, hopefully.
Zero times.
Yeah.
Unless and until you're like second, third round of the playoffs, at which point.
Great. Yeah, and there's no strong opposition. Obviously, they have to go on the road at Washington State, but no strong opposition in the non-con either.
For all intents and purposes, that's a great practice game. If you lose it, it kind of doesn't matter for the Big 12 race, and you have played a Power 5-ish, still not sure how to classify them, but Power 4-ish opponent on the road a long ways from home. So I think it's actually good to get that experience, win or lose. But yeah, count me as not worried at all. And I think this is kind of a defense mechanism. When your favorite team loses, you have to blame it on a curse or the alignment of the stars or the refs. People are scarred from last year when they probably shouldn't have looked at that schedule and believed when the odds maker said 7.5 wins and you're looking at it and you're like, oh yeah, we have to go to Austin and all this other stuff. They probably shouldn't have believed that we were going to win the Big 12, and yet they all did. And now that, because they don't want to be hurt again, they're like, well, I'm not going to drink the Kool-Aid. I don't want to hope. I don't want to believe, even though all the evidence is pointing in a different direction.
Jamal Shedd,
in my opinion,
had an incredible putback dunk, by the way. Let's see. Any other thoughts, comments, concerns to get to there on your end, Money?
Saw some good things about Caleb Douglas, Florida transfer. I feel like I'm going to be pretty high on the receiver room this year, which if it doesn't hit, would kind of suck because it's been such a low point for your roster the last couple of seasons. But with Kelly, Douglas, even the guys you bring back, I think Coy Eakin will have a really good year. Micah Hudson, hopefully he gets healthy. I know Conyers kind of banged up. He's a tight end. I think you're going to run more 12 personnel than anyone in the Big 12 this year. You've got so much depth there. I think Trey Jackson looks good and saw some good things about him as well. I'm excited. There are some comments from Morton about, you know, the offense is going to look different this year. We're really going to try and do what Kittley wants to do. We're really going to try and air it out, have a balanced offense. And so I'm excited to see what a healthy Baron Morton can look like passing to a receiver room that I think has a lot of potential behind an offensive line that certainly seems to have tried to address some issues. Obviously, you've got to see how it plays out on the field, but added some really good pieces in the portal.
Kyle, anything else you want to discuss today?
I think if they move Caleb Rogers to center, which has been discussed, it probably means they're going to be better at tackle than they were last year. Otherwise, they wouldn't be moving him from tackle. I think he's also a much better run blocker than he is pass blocker. And with the two guards you brought in, next to him, Vinny Scurry and Davion Carter, I think you're going to be really, 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 really good running in between the tackles. those three dudes, Mullen guys, plus Taj Brooks, the number one tackles breaker in FBS last year. I was watching some Taj highlights. He was like doing it himself. It wasn't like, I'm going to get these first 6 yards and then like make a play on the second level. It was like, let me bounce off three dudes at the line of scrimmage and then go get 7 or 8 yards. If they let him actually get ahead of steam into the second level and then start breaking tackles against these 185-pound DBs or something, I know that's not – that goes against what you were just talking about, that Baron Morton's like, well, we're finally going to be able to throw the ball all over the place. But my goodness, I think you might be able to run it up the gut like nobody's business if those guards are as good as we think they're going to be and if Caleb Rogers is playing at center.
I think I saw a Rhett Lashley quote this week from some guy who always posts football clips. I can't remember who it is. I wish I could because his account's amazing. But I think Rhett Lashley said, you pass to score, you run to win. And I feel like that's a really good formula for this offense to have. And I think they have a chance to do that this year.
Was it Coach Dan Casey?
I think that's it. Yeah. Love his account. Good stuff.
Great account.
We didn't talk DeVries, West Virginia.
Yes, was getting back to that. That was my next comment out of football. What do you think about the new head coach there at West Virginia? Money?
I like it. I think they're going to be better off because of it. I think he's going to take his son with him. I imagine he will. And his son is an absolute hooper, so that always helps. But longtime assistant at Creighton. I think this is actually his first head coaching job is at Drake, but has done a really, really, really good job at that program, at that level with the resources they have. And so obviously West Virginia is just like a loaded gun for a young coach that if they can recruit well and if they can win basketball games, you're going to have a lot of success. And so I think that's a really good hire on their part. I mean, even just like I was – kind of looking back at some early season stuff after Tech lost this weekend, man, West Virginia, like before Bob Huggins had his arrest and they had players, you know, getting fired by the NCAA and guys getting thrown in jail, like they might have been a Final Four team. Like they had an insane roster, crazy amount of pieces. Like that Morgantown is not a hard place to win if you know what you're doing.
There was some discourse today between Oklahoma State fans and West Virginia fans that I think it was an Oklahoma State fan that said, man, if we lose a coach to West Virginia, we're worse off than I thought. West Virginia is a better basketball program than Oklahoma State, yeah?
100%.
Like not even – certainly recently – now, I know Oklahoma State has basketball history with Eddie Sutton and others, but like even like historically, West Virginia is the better program. Maybe it only matters currently, but Oklahoma State's NIL is in shambles. I don't think they have a good – they certainly don't have a good NIL world in football, and I don't think that translates to a good NIL world in basketball. With the passing of their lead donor there. I don't know. If I was a head coach, I'd rather be at West Virginia. I mean, I think that's fairly easy to say, especially in basketball. Maybe even in football too at this point. I think West Virginia is in a good position to make noise in the new Big 12, I think even more than what they were before. If they get rid of Neil Brown, I think they can even get any better. Shout out Neil Brown. Let's see. Oklahoma State, what do they do now? I know I made a joke about Gottlieb earlier, but it does look like they're going to lose their main target over at Vanderbilt, allegedly. So who do they go after now? Do you have any idea?
I have no clue.
Yeah.
Everything I've seen from their fan base has been like, hire Bill Self. And I'm like, oh my goodness, y'all need an awakening. That's even worse than Louisville fans asking for Scott Drew.
Bob Huggins. There's a big push for Bob Huggins there at the end of the Louisville push.
Yeah, I don't know what they do.
Who would you rather have at Oklahoma State? Like, legitimately. Start, bench, cut. Gottlieb, Beard, Huggins.
Am I ranking these as a fan of this program or as my current state wanting to watch their absolute downfall?
Like, you're the Oklahoma State AD and you're trying to make the program better.
Starting Beard.
Yeah.
Benching Huggy. Cutting Gottlieb.
Do you think Huggy, I mean, he looked fine retired this year. He still lives in West Virginia. I think he wants to settle down there, but do you think he has any juice to go coach somewhere else, especially in the Big 12?
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. Any Ubers in Stillwater that can avoid some DUIs for him? Surely they have Uber in Stillwater. All right, Kyle, any other final thoughts, comments, questions, concerns? I think I'm about ready to wrap it up.
No, I guess that's all. I'll save future football offseason hype for the Patreon.
Do you want to do an ultimate roster?
You know I do.
All right, this is the Northern Nobodies. Must have played for an AFC North or NFC North team that did not make the playoffs in 2023. Only stats from 2023 will be applied. So who do we have? The Steelers? The Bengals.
They made the playoffs.
The Steelers made the playoffs. The Bengals. The only the Bengals from the NFC North. Did the Browns? No, the Browns missed the playoffs at the end.
No, the Browns made it. They lost to the Texans.
That's right. So only the Bengals.
Bengals, Vikings.
Your Vikings.
Bears.
Your Bears.
That's it. Bengals, Vikings, Bears.
Okay. Man, Justin Fields?
The only quarterback who played the whole season was Justin Fields.
Okay.
Bengals, Vikings, Bears. I think Ja'Marr Chase was mostly healthy. Not his best year. Like him and DJ Moore, Jordan Addison. I think two of those three should probably be.
Yeah, I'd go, in there. I would go Moore had some big games. Did he have a big season? Addison was the best Vikings receiver, right? J.J. Addison.
Yeah. Hockenson got hurt late. Kind of late in the year.
Cole Kmet, did he have a Cole Kmet from the Bears?
He was up and down. I'm trying to figure out if Hockenson still had a better year despite missing some games.
Running back, you want to go Mixon? Did he
Mixon, play? Yeah.
Okay. All right,
I think Mixon. So
we want to go Addison or Moore or Chase? Pick two out of three. So who are we cutting? Who are we cutting out of the three?
I think the safer play is Addison and Chase. Like you said, Moore had a couple really big games. I feel better about the other two.
Tight end. Is there another running back? Who is the Bears? Khalil Herbert? Who's the lead back for the Bears? I don't even know. And then Vikings, Madison, I don't think had a strong year.
Mm-mm.
So tight end, we're going Cole Kmet or Hawk.
I don't know. I wish I could remember when Hawk got hurt. I thought it was. Well, I don't know. I can't remember when it was. It's like if it was week 11, week 12, we should probably go commit. If it was week 16, 17.
Yeah.
Is that cheating to look up when he got hurt?
Probably. You can do it, though. I don't care. Flip a coin. Money, you want to break the tie here?
I'll go Hockenson.
Yeah.
That's how I'm leaning too.
I feel like it was like week 10. I feel like I remember talking about it at the office during fantasy football. That's like around really... then, 10 to 12.
Fields, Addison, Mixon, Hockenson, Chase. Down with that?
I guess so.
All right, let's send it. Pretty good. Jordan Addison, A minus. Jamar Chase, A. The rest, A pluses. DJ Moore was the leading receiver.
Crap.
And then Jamar Chase was the leading flex. But there's a 20-point difference, though.
Did we get the right tight end?
Yes. Yes, we did. Joe Mixon, Hockenson, and Fields, all A pluses. Optimal. So optimal was 1265, and we got 1200 on the dot. So that's pretty damn good. All right. That's the show. Final thoughts, Kyle?
Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened.
Turn out the lights. The party's over. All right, and that's about the Texas Tech men's basketball season. Nothing else.
Right.
All right, we will see Wednesday. Follow us on Patreon, patreon.com/gamblinggauchos. I saw a PAC Pride screen name join this week. So they were doing some recon on us. I'm sure they sent some screenshots to their friends about us blowing up in the chat.
I was waiting to see my preview show up on Twitter somewhere.
It was after the game, too.
Yeah. Well, we'll take your $5, whoever you are.
Yeah, sure.
All right, let's go watch this Houston game. They're still up by 9. It's going back and forth, though. Ryan says, cry because it's Kyle's fault. You know, it's Kyle's fault that the gambling couches exist. So,
I bet Ryan is crying because it's Kyle's fault. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
Oh, crying Ryan over there?
Crying Ryan.
All right.
Love y'all.
I guess I should end it. All right.